friends. There were two children, each 4 years of age, who always played together. One of them was a Jewish little girl by the name of Abrams. And the other was a Catholic little girl. We shall give her the name of McGarity. And the little Jewish girl was a very good little girl, and she went to the synagogue every week. And the little Catholic girl went to the Catholic church every week. And on this particular Tuesday night, just about time for our program to come on, the little Jewish girl announced it, saying, "Come on, McGarity's rabbi is on the air." Our subject for this evening is education. As you know, considerable fun has been poked at it. Will Rogers once described college bread as a 4 years loaf. There was a humorist in the last century who said that being a widow for 2 years is far better than a college education. And Robert Hutchins, formerly of the University of Chicago, said that the reason we give sheepskins to college graduates is in order to cover up their intellectual nakedness. These are, of course, very extreme views on education. But every one of us, of course, regrets that we had not studied more when we were in school. I got into considerable difficulty a year or two ago on television just by saying, I thought in mere fun, that I spent 4 years in the third grade. And from that time on, many fathers and mothers have written in protest saying that they can't induce their children to study. They said, "I was in the fourth grade for 3 years, and why shouldn't they be in the flunk year after year?" But as I said, we do regret that we had not studied harder, particularly when we go to France. And here we study book French, and we go over there, and somehow or other they never speak book French in Paris. You get mad because the horses and dogs understand French and you don't. So the American always shouts. He feels the reason the French do not understand him is because he doesn't speak loud enough. And about the only one who can understand American French in Paris is some other American. But our concern with education is not so much the vocational or professional side of it, but just a general philosophy of education with particular reference to colleges and universities. Now, the general aim of education is to train the whole man, the intellect and will, not just the mind alone. We went into a store to buy a suit of clothes. We would not take a suit that had only one sleeve. And if you bought a pair of shoes, you'd want toes in it unless you wanted to be in style. And so with education. But tonight we're only going to talk about the intellect. Perhaps some other time we may talk about the will. Now the intellect, if it is to be properly trained, should be developed along these three lines. First of all, an educated man will seek truth. Secondly, he will have a correlation of studies. That is to say, one subject in his college will be related to another subject. And thirdly, there will be depth. Particularly the deepening of mystery. First of all, truth. The purpose of education is not just to train us for democracy, not to train us to make a living. The purpose of education is to acquaint us with truth. Truth about everything. Truth in a certain sense is narrowing. I know, before you go to school, you're free to believe that Shakespeare was born in 208. And then you have to believe that he was born in 1564 and died in 1616. I hope that's right. I haven't looked that up. That just came right out of my unconsciousness. And We have to know the truth of science, the truth of literature, and above all, the truth of man. We're not able to serve democracy unless we are true human beings. We cannot make a living, for example, as an engineer, unless we know the truth of engineering. Beyond all these particular truths, the one basic truth that we have to learn is, of course, the truth of our own existence. We would not have a gadget in our house 5 minutes without knowing the meaning of that gadget. And yet some people will live 10, 20, 50, 60 years without knowing why they are here or where they are going. And when life is meaningless, it's very dull. And it is this absence of a goal or purpose that makes so many people full of worries and anxieties, fears, and psychoses, neuroses. After all, what's the use of living unless we know the purpose of living? Therefore, the first thing that education should give us is, what is the truth about a man? Why was he made? We will not develop that in detail. His ultimate purpose, when all other purposes are satisfied, is to attain perfect life and truth and love, which is the definition of God. Now, why is truth important? There is a principle in psychology that is called ideomotor. That means that every idea has a kind of emotive power. It tends to work itself out into act. Suppose you're at a football game. You're in the stands where you can see the plays readily. And from this superior position of yours, you see a fullback swinging around right end. But you see an opening around tackle. And so you move this way. You have the idea in your mind, and the idea works itself out into act. As a matter of fact, every idea that we do have tends to some kind of expression. That is why very often our actions betray our ideas. Some say it doesn't make any difference what you believe. It all depends upon how you act. That is nonsense, because we act upon our beliefs. If we put truth into our mind, then we will lead truly human lives. Now, if every idea works itself out into act, see how important it is to put true ideas into our mind? We ought to treat our mind just exactly as we treat our stomach. We do not put garbage in our stomach. So we have pure food laws. But our stomach is not nearly as important as our mind. And some people read murders, headlines, whenever there's a hatchet murder. Wonderful. Some newspapers delight in a story of that particular kind. Well, think of pudding. Infidelities, disloyalties, slanders, backbitings, and all of that into one's head. It's all going to work itself out into act eventually. That's why it's important to keep the right kind of thoughts in one's head. But it may be objected, well, how about evil? Should we not know evil? The old Greek Socrates said that evil is ignorance. That is not true. Otherwise, the more educated the were, the more educated you were, the more virtuous you would be. Education does not deliver us always from evil. Sometimes education makes clever devils instead of stupid ones. And if we have to have a choice between the two, we much prefer the stupid. And then, from another point of view, when it is said we must know evil, it is well to understand how we might know it. When Satan tempted our first parents in the Garden of Paradise, he said to them, God has forbidden you to eat of this tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The reason he did that was because God himself knows the difference between good and evil. And if you know the difference between good and evil, you will be like God. Therefore, eat the tree. Know good and evil as he does. And Satan says, and you will be as gods. What was the fallacy? Fallacy was, there are two ways of knowing anything. For example, you can know typhoid fever. Well, as I know it now, negatively. I do not have it, so I just simply negate it. There are some people who know typhoid fever experimentally. They have it. Now, how does God know evil? He knows evil negatively. How do we know evil? We know evil like the typhoid fever patient knows typhoid. It gets into us. And it works its way out. Not only through the alleys and the gateways of our body, but all through our lives. And it eventually begins to possess us. It's one thing to know intellectual errors, but another thing to know evil deeds experimentally. We may be captured by them. Hence the goal of all education is to know truth. As our divine Lord said, the truth will make you free. Some people think that freedom alone makes truth. No, freedom alone does not make truth. It helps discover it. It's very essential for it. But the real freedom comes from the truth. Only when you know the truth about an airplane are you free to drive it. Only when you know the truth of medicine are you free to practice it. And when you know the truth of life, then you're most free. Now, not only truth, but a second condition of an educated man is that there be a correlation of studies. That means that when we go to college particularly, we should realize that despite the fact that they have hundreds and hundreds of courses, I looked at the college catalog not very long ago that had 29 distinct courses on public speaking. There aren't 29 different things to say about it. One thing is, don't read a manuscript or a teletype. But they had 29 courses, and I said, why do you have 29 courses? And they said, well, other universities do. Well, they were keeping up with the Joneses. But in a real college course, there are some courses that are more important than others. And we are to regard wisdom very much as a pyramid. And therefore, the wisdom that is at the top of the pyramid in sciences, well, such as the Greeks put at the top, metaphysics, mathematics, physics, which is a little different from our modern physics, but we'll let that go. They said that all of these sciences illumined the lower sciences, which is true. For example, you would not understand music unless you had mathematics. In a musical composition, not every note has the same stress. In language, not everyone has the same emphasis, every word. But today, the tendency in education, instead of having some courses which are much more important than which everyone ought to take in order that he might be truly informed to live a human life, we have the shelf theory. The shelf theory is that you have a number of bottles on the shelf. These are bottles. The camera will stand back when I draw, please. Now, the idea is, when you go to college today, is it doesn't make any difference what course you take. You just elect any course that you please. And at the end of 4 years, you collect 64 bottles, 64 credits. It doesn't make a particle of difference what's in the bottles. Sand, water, milk, makes no difference what. They all have equal value. Bring them to the dean, and you'll get a sheepskin. The result is that people today are not getting the education that they ought to receive. They got a congeries of unrelated and disconnected and disjointed subjects, but they cannot put them together. A really educated man sees a relationship between various branches of knowledge. For example, between science and theology, between history and the Old Testament, and so forth. On the other hand, our assumption today in education is that no one subject is more important than another, and what is important is that you count something that has never been counted before. If you do that, you're supposed to really deserve a PhD. And that is the reason we have really peculiar theses. I know a university that has counted the datives, the vocatives, the ablatives, and the genitives in Virgil, the infinitives in Augustine. Did you know that there was a university that gave a PhD thesis degree for the thesis, Four Ways of Cooking Ham? Did you know that there was a university that gave, imagine, a doctorate philosophy degree? It almost makes you want to forget philosophy. They gave a PhD degree for a thesis on four ways of dishwashing. Then there was an MA thesis given, or degree given, for a psychological study of the post-rotational eye movement of squabs. But I think the prize is that university, and I do not mention the name of any of these universities. It was the university that gave a PhD degree to the student who wrote on the microbic content of cotton undershirts. Can't you imagine the student all the time working, slaving on that thesis till he got it done? Therefore, not only the knowledge of truth and not only a correlation of subjects with certain subjects which ought to be essential so that a man will be truly educated, but finally, a truly educated man will also have a philosophy of life. That is to say, he will be so educated that he will deepen the mystery of things. Increases knowledge of one particular thing. Here's an example of increasing knowledge. Take, for example, the atom. Now, a man who's truly educated would know that the atom in the 19th century was considered as homogeneous, like a billiard ball, all matter. Then we developed our knowledge, deepened it, and we found that at the center was a positive charge of electricity, and round about were negative charges called neutrons. Then we discovered that this was a kind of a miniature of the solar system. And in the center was the sun, which corresponded to the proton. And round about, corresponding to neutrons, were Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, the various planets. Oh, yes, now that the dog show is on, Pluto. And then the knowledge was deepened a little more, as Sir James Jean said, now we discovered that the most scientific explanation of the universe is that everything is light. Either bottled light, matter, like this board, or unbottled light, like illumination. That's deepening knowledge. Today, the tendency in education, instead of deepening the mystery, is to make substitutions. Here there is a development like life itself, where life begins with a fetus and finally a complete organism. But here there's substitution. For example, the automobile was substituted for the horse and buggy. But the automobile didn't grow out of the horse and buggy. And so today, students, instead of being given a very definite philosophy of life which they can explore all their days after they get their AB and their PhD, they're merely given a point of view, a fad, a fancy. And then after 10, 20 years, it's no good. Think of those who were educated 40 years ago. They were entirely influenced by the philosophy of Spencer. Now he's forgotten. Freud will be as forgotten in 30 years as Spencer's forgotten now.
And a student, therefore, who finishes without a definite philosophy of life, whose mystery he can deepen every day, is rather like a man who has whirled himself around until he became dizzy. The earth under his feet no longer looks stable. Everything is in movement. And is it that that makes life unpleasant to live? Whereas if one has a philosophy of life that is solid, that stands up against all vicissitudes, then he can enter the labyrinth of life and take with him the string of that philosophy. He can always find his way back. But today, men are laying down the tracks, for example, of idealism, and then tearing up those tracks, then laying down other tracks, and then tearing those up, with the result that life is lived without ever having explored its depth, just as men today are not exploring the depth of love in marriage, but substituting one for another. So they're substituting one fad, one fancy for another, instead of getting hold of that which is solid and bedrock that makes life a joy to live. And this kind of education means, of course, that in a democracy, if there's any ideal, it is this, that we do not want uniformity of education. We want unity of education. We want unity of education in the sense that we'll all be reared good citizens of this great land of ours. But we do not want uniformity of education in the sense that everyone is poured into identically the same mold, into the same standards, into the same fads. Because once a nation and a people begin following exactly the same system of education and identically the same pattern, it will not be long until they will be grouped into one party. Democracy insists on a diversity of education. And let the independent small colleges, therefore, show the way to America, in order that it may continue to love its God, to preserve its soul and its love of truth, and then it will be truly great before God and before men.